Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio 89.1 FM. We explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I am one of your hosts for today, Ursula Rudenberg, together with my co-host, Susan Franson.
Hi, Ursula.
Hi, Susan. You're going to give us some weather?
Unfortunately, today snow is likely, and if you look out your windows, it's already here, mainly between 11 a.m. and 2 p.m., cloudy and high near 35. Southeast wind 7 to 9 miles per hour, becoming west in the afternoon. Chance of precipitation is 60%. Total daytime snow accumulation of 1 to 2 inches possible. Tonight, a 50% chance of snow, mainly before 8 p.m. Cloudy, then gradually becoming partly cloudy with a low around 18. Wind chill values as low as 5. North, northwest wind 10 to 14 miles per hour. New snow accumulation of less than half an inch possible. Tuesday, mostly sunny with high near 30. Wind chill values as low as 5. Blustery with north-northwest wind 13 to 20 miles per hour, with gusts as high as 28 miles per hour. Tuesday night, mostly clear, with a low around 20. Wind chill values as low as 10. Light and variable wind becoming south-southeast 5 to 9 miles per hour after midnight. Wednesday, mostly sunny, with a high near 51. Windy, with a south-southeast wind 11 to 16 miles per hour, increasing to 21 to 26 miles per hour in the afternoon. Winds could gust as high as 37 miles per hour.
Thank you, Susan. We have a phenology report this morning, which is about the woodcock. Now, we were instructed by Pat Schlaubaum, our naturalist reporter, that the woodcock needed to be only presented when the snow's gone, when it's spring conditions. But we're going to go ahead and do this anyway. Sorry, Pat, with our eye on that 50-degree weather that's coming 2 days down the road.
Today's focus on phenology is the American woodcock, or timber doodles. It is a secretive and migratory bird found throughout Iowa each spring, summer, and autumn. Iowa is on the western edge of its breeding range in the eastern U.S. Woodcocks return each spring in mid to late March. It has a plump body, short legs, and a large rounded head, and a long, straight, prehensile bill. Adults are 10 to 12 inches long and weigh 5 ounces. Females are considerably larger than males. The bill is nearly 3 inches long. The woodcock uses its long prehensile bill to probe in the soil for food, mainly invertebrates and especially earthworms. A unique bone and muscle arrangement lets the bird open and close the tip of its upper bill while it is sunk in the ground. Both the underside of the upper bill and the long tongue are rough surfaced for grasping slippery prey, earthworms. Woodcocks have large eyes located high in the head, and their visual field is probably the largest of any bird, 360 degrees in the horizontal plane and 180 degrees in the vertical plane. The plumage is a cryptic mix of browns, grays, and blacks, superbly camouflaged against the leaf litter. The brown-mottled American woodcock walks slowly along the forest floor, probing the soil with its long bill in search of earthworms. Unlike its coastal shorebird relatives, this plump little shorebird lives in young forests and shrubby old fields across Iowa. Its cryptic plumage and low-profile behavior make it hard to find, except in the springtime at dawn and dusk, when the males show off for females by giving loud nasal peep calls and performing dazzling aerial displays. The male gives a series of peeps on the ground and then circles to a height of about 300 feet, producing twittering sounds with his wings as he ascends. He then drops in a zigzag pattern to the ground where he walks stiff-legged around the female. This dance is repeated over and over again and it is a delightful rite of passage each spring. According to noted ecologist and author Jim Dinsmore, they place their nest on the ground in wooded areas along habitat edges or in the thickets along streams. The nest is a simple cup lined with dead leaves, pine needles, or twigs. They normally lay 4 eggs. Most nests are started in mid-April to early May. The female incubates 20 to 21 days. The young are covered with down and leave the nest soon after hatching. They are really cute little boogers and are cared for by the female for about 2 weeks, and the young fly at 4 weeks of age. As an aside, there is a pair of peregrine falcons nesting at the Iowa State Capitol building. One of the falcon's courtship strategies is for the male to food stash or create a cache of food for its mate. Prey items are gathered as ornamental courtship food items. Recently, a food cache was discovered that contained 14 food items, with 11 being woodcock. Clearly, the male falcon was selecting for woodcock. Taking into account the woodcock's sky dance performance each spring, it is easy to imagine the falcon utilizing the woodcock's vulnerability when they are fluttering back to earth. There would be a clear advantage for the male falcon in securing a few woodcock for their mate. However, the food cache was discovered with fresh woodcock in October, during the autumn season, when the sky dance is not performed. The male falcon was clearly selecting for the famous timberdoodles, even when they were not performing their courtship sky dance. It really shows how important the woodcock is for the falcon's courtship in spring, when the woodcock are vulnerable, and in autumn, when woodcock are migrating through Iowa. And that's our Focus on Phenology for March, when springtime's beginning to burst out all over.
You're listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, and I think we are all ready for spring to burst out all over, and it will in a few days. Also, at the beginning of the show, we want to begin with an update about last week's story about medical cannabis. I've been reading from a press release about an event that's going to occur today, March 24th at 10:30 a.m. at the Iowa State House in room 24, where current and former Iowans will be describing how medical cannabis helped them. The speakers will include Rachel Salmeski, who is a mother of a child benefiting from medical cannabis from Waterloo, Logan Edwards, who's a veteran from Davenport, who spent 6 years in the Marine Corps in Iraq, and Don Carr, a Cedar Rapids business owner and former city council member, and also a Vietnam veteran who alleviates PTSD from his service in Vietnam with cannabis. And then stay tuned to hear from a guest we have today with us in the studio, Betsy Mayfield, and how she has collected 500 signatures in support of the minimum wage to deliver to State Senator Herman Quirnbach. It's a 21st century fable about how a small group of people can have an impact.
Coming up on the program is a report from Story County Youth Philanthropists, who have just awarded 10 grants to groups in this area. You'll hear from a couple of these young philanthropists, Harry Sivaskandan and Emma Peeler, about the grants and how they selected them, as well as from Susie Sheerholz describing how the program was started.
Let's listen to that now.
I have here with me in the studio two board members from Story County Youth Philanthropists. I'd like to ask you first to introduce yourselves.
Hi, my name is Harry Sivaskandan.
My name is Emma Peeler.
And what is Story County Youth Philanthropists?
Well, Story County Youth Philanthropists is a, as in the name, a youth philanthropy group where we have about 11 members who come together and have the opportunity to read different grants from different organizations and groups within the Ames community, and we have a chance to learn more about them and offer them funding.
Well, we also, our group, we meet twice a month, and each semester we plan and complete a service project and a fundraiser.
I noticed that your board has 10 members. Are there more members than that who are in Story County Youth Philanthropists?
Usually it's around 10, 11. I think over the years it became really large and sort of shrunk because of people's schedules and whatnot.
You just had an award banquet. Why don't you tell us about that banquet, and then we'll talk about the group.
I was the announcer or main speaker during the event. I told a little bit about the group and also introduced the grants a little bit. The other members talked as well. It was really nice. We got to meet a lot of people who worked on the projects that we funded. It was a lot of fun.
Like Emma said, it was a really great experience because throughout the year, from December, we'd been reading grants and for different projects that needed funding. And we hadn't actually got to meet the people who were in charge of these projects. So it was great at the awards ceremony. We got to talk face to face. We got to do a little mingling and hear a little bit more about the project than what was within the grant application. And overall, it was just a great way to give back to the community and just feel really fulfilling.
Well, as I looked over the grant awardees, I was interested because four of them have connections to KHOI. And the Arc of Story County is our featured group this month. Each month we have a Community Service Appreciation Award. And then Raising Readers of Story County, we recently had a nice program with them. And the Volunteer Center of Story County provides us with a couple of our volunteers, including our intern engineer, who often engineers our 7 a.m. live program. Her name is Rebecca Brown. And then YSS, Youth and Shelter Services, is just such a presence in the community that we often have reasons to talk about that. So, did you have trouble selecting from the list? How many people did you have applying?
I know we had more than we could fund, which is always a little disappointing, but it was nice that we could fund as many as we could this year.
Now, where does your money come from?
We're given money by
the Story County Foundation.
Yeah.
And we also had a couple other donors from around Story County. I'm not sure who exactly. We received funding from Story County Community Foundation.
And do you do any fundraising yourselves?
We do a little bit here and there. We do some stuff at different places like Orange Leaf. And we also apply for grants as well to get money, like the Kiwanis grant.
Was it hard to make your decisions?
I think at first it was a little hard because the first meeting we had, everyone was just trying to get down what exactly each group, what project they were actually doing, and then how each member felt about the project. But then as we started sort of looking at our guidelines and looked at certain things that we couldn't fund, we were able to eliminate a couple of people who we could not fund, and then it just got easier from there.
I read that your grants were from $500 to $1,000. I noticed you have several at $1,000 or near $1,000, and just a couple that are $500. Was there any way that you differentiated those amounts?
When it came to the end, when we were making the final decisions, we decided to partially fund a couple of them. A lot of the people asked for $1,000, but we wanted to spread the money out throughout the county as much as possible, so we ended up partially funding a couple of them, which is always disappointing, but I'm glad we could support them.
Were there any that were particularly fun to think about?
For me, my personal favorite was the Lego project by Youth and Shelter Services. I think it really speaks to me because as a kid, I used to play with Legos a lot, and so the idea that Legos can be used for therapy is such a great feeling to me.
Could you give a little more description of what this is? Lego Play Therapy Project, what are they doing?
Essentially, they're using the money to get different Lego play sets, and each child that goes into this facility has the opportunity to play with these play sets, as well as I've heard from their leader of the project who said they'd also be watching the Lego movie and doing stuff with that. And so just anything Lego, getting their hands on with the Legos, as well as sort of indirectly playing with them to help them in any way.
As I look through the list, I see there are a lot of things that are play related. There's the Ames Soccer Club Youth Field Improvements, and the Arc of Story County is getting Special Olympics practice space, so there's more play. And this one I don't understand. Community Housing Initiatives Incorporated. This is a $900 grant. Growing Minds Garden Project.
The Growing Minds Project was a garden. I can't remember exactly the items they were asking for, but I know that they were working with people in the community, and I think kids also on learning how to grow a garden and getting to eat some of the freshly grown food.
But Growing Minds, what's that? How does that fit into the gardens?
I think the idea of just learning how to plant stuff, how food is produced, how people can learn to create a garden, sustain the garden, all those things are sort of can create awareness and just make kids more educated into how farmers actually make food and how people can make food.
You have some other food-related ones that I'll mention right now. United Way of Story County, you have Cooking from the Pantry, a Girl Scout project. What's that?
I found that one really interesting. The Girl Scouts created a cookbook that includes recipes that can be made with food items commonly found in a food pantry. And I think that's interesting because it sounds like you can make things out of things found in a food pantry, because normally recipes require food that is fresh and not usually at a food pantry. I think the people that only can get food from a food pantry or get most of their food from there could benefit a lot from having this variety of recipes.
Oh, but that does sound like fun and a significant thing to do. So the other one, the Volunteer Center of Story County, has Elementary School Gardens Project. What did you do for that?
That one also, along with the Growing Minds Project as well, the idea of growing a garden and was a really neat thing because we've never had a grant that's offered stuff with gardening, so the two grants that did, we thought they were very interesting and decided to fund them.
Well, you have only one that's outside of Ames, and that's the Friends of Slater Public Library Story County Tween Read. What was that?
The Tween Read program was, well, it was Slater's public library plan to have tweens all read the same book. I believe this year they were going to do Ungifted by Gordon Corman, and they're all going to read the book and talk about it and discuss it, have literature circles and stuff throughout the summer.
Well, actually, I was very interested in that because I've been to the Slater Library, and I think it's a charming library and really so nice in a small town like Slater to have a library where there are things going on and that's really a community center. And so glad that you were able to help them a little bit. And then there's one more that I ought to mention that's quite different from the others, and that's the Lutheran Services of Iowa Beloit Residential Treatment Medication Cart. Oh, how'd you choose that one?
Well, when we first read it, we saw that it was about a facility called Beloit, which treats at-risk children, about 60 at-risk children, if I'm not mistaken. And their medications, the cabinet or the cart that it was put in, it was safe, but it could be safer. So the idea that we could help with that by allowing them to make a cart that's just easier for the people to distribute the medicine and just protect it was a great thing that I think most of us in the group thought was well worth funding.
Well, I didn't ask at the beginning, but I think it's important to include this. What is Youth Philanthropist and how did it get started?
A youth philanthropist, well, philanthropist is giving money to people. Like, Bill Gates is a big philanthropist, I know that. And I think it started about 6 years ago. I know that one of the first members was Tabby Budd, or Tabitha Budd. And she was a student leader for the first 2 years Harry and I were on it. And she was a good student leader. When I started Story County Youth Philanthropy, I did not know very much about philanthropy or much about the community. And Tabby, along with the other members of Story County Youth Philanthropy, who mostly have all graduated by now, taught me a lot, and the granting process taught me so much about our community. I had no idea that many of these organizations existed before I joined this group.
Along with what Emma said, too, I think that I myself had no really clue what was going on in the community, and I didn't really know much about philanthropy as well, and just the idea of learning with Tabby, as well as Susie Scherholz. She worked with the Story County Community Foundation, and she was helping oversee the group. She really helped as well to sort of identify things that are really worth funding and just sort of how to go through the process of looking at a grant and stuff like that.
Well, why is this a good idea for high school students? They give you the money and they say, how do you want to spend it? Is that sort of the idea? Well, I'm not stating it right. So what do you think it is?
I think that it's the idea about responsibility with money. I think that the group teaches that when you have money and you have the chance to give to different groups that are helping within the community or within any other community around the country, that you should try to contribute as much as you can. And I think that along with that, it builds awareness within young adults about issues within the community, that so when they grow up, they can help resolve some of these issues.
I think Story County Youth Philanthropy helps the teens involve. I learn, as Harry said, about the importance of giving back to the community. I would have no idea how much the community needs all of these things. Since I didn't know they existed, I didn't know many statistics about what's important and how I can help before.
If anyone's looking to join, we have a membership application that will be released somewhere around April, and you can look on the website.
I believe the website is, I believe we're on the Volunteer Center Story County website under Youth Philanthropy.
And if you're interested to join, go ahead and apply.
And is this for anybody in Story County, or is it just, I mean, these are students, high school students, I guess, but could they come from some other high school?
As long as it's within the Story County area, and they're between the grades of 9 and, or they're 9th graders through 12th graders, then can apply.
Yeah, as long as they're 9th graders through 12th graders in the 2014-2015 school year. And we would love to have members apply. We have a number of seniors graduating this year, so we have spaces open up for people to join. And
do you have anybody currently from other high schools?
We have Hannah Dreyer from Gilbert High School.
And we also have Sophie Wilson from Nevada.
Thanks so much for both of you coming in. Please reintroduce yourselves to our audience.
My name's Harry Siviskanden.
My name's Emma Peeler.
Thank you, Harry and Emma, for being with us.
Thank you.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, and that was Harry and Emma from the Youth Philanthropists of the Story County Community Foundation. And the Youth Philanthropists gave KHOI a grant last year, which has paid for a lot of our recording equipment that allows us to go out in the field and make recordings. So we really appreciate the Youth Philanthropists. And Susan, you also spoke with Susie Scherholz about them. Is that correct?
Yes. Could we have that now?
There was a recorded interview?
There's a recorded interview, okay. Yes.
Here with Susie Scherholz. Well, I wanted to talk to you because yesterday I had an interview with two members of what I now know is Skype, Story County Youth Philanthropists.
That's correct.
CYP. And I asked them how it got started, and they mentioned your name, and I remembered you're talking very fondly of starting Skype, and I thought you'd be the person to tell us how it happened.
Oh, well, thank you for your interest in it, because it definitely has been a special thing through the years for me. It was probably 2008, first part of 2009, possibly. I had gone to a conference, and there was somebody there from another state speaking about youth philanthropy programs and the possibility of starting one in your community. And it really hit a note with me. I really liked what they were saying. I've always liked working with young people, and that just really appealed to me. And then that summer, we had a young woman from southern Iowa come to Iowa State as a student. And she had been a part of a youth philanthropy program from eighth grade through high school that was started by a corporation in southern Iowa that wanted to instill some philanthropy in their communities, and they really had an extensive program for youth. And she really felt we should be doing something like that in Story County, and she said, I'll help you if you will help me make it happen. And that was just too good to pass up. And so we started looking at other communities. Waterloo had a small program, and also Dubuque did. So we looked at what they had been doing and started gathering our own ideas about it. And then I took it to the Story County Community Foundation to see if we could get some commitment in terms of partnering to make this happen. And they decided that it would be a program of the Story County Community Foundation. And then as we got started in our planning process, the Volunteer Center of Story County was interested in coming on board. And it worked very well because they had a VISTA volunteer that had been in a youth philanthropy program in Waterloo for just 1 year, but she was very, very excited about it, and she offered to help. So we became partners right away with the Volunteer Center.
What is youth philanthropy? What's the point?
Well, really, the youth had a misunderstanding that in order to be a philanthropist, you really had to have a lot of money. It was only about giving a lot of money to make a big difference. And what we wanted them to start feeling is that every little bit helps, whether it's just helping somebody across the street. That's a form of philanthropy. And it has many faces, and it's giving of your time and your talents as well as your treasures. And we really wanted them to have the opportunity to experience that, to know what the needs are in Story County, to get to know some of the organizations that are serving these needs and what types of things they need to help them do their jobs better. It was just started as an educational program. And we started with just Ames High, and now it's expanded out into Story County. But it was basically an educational program for helping them learn what philanthropy really is and how they can make a difference as they grow up.
Well, I noticed when we talked about the grants that they were particularly appropriate for youth philanthropists. There were a lot of them that had a play element, and they talked about this one being fun. And I wondered, are the guidelines for the grants such that they encourage programs such as youth soccer or tween library?
Actually, they are. It was a very unique process in our first year. When we actually took applications from students that were interested and had our first group of, I think there were 16 students, they started from the beginning and named themselves, developed their guidelines for their grants. The Story County Community Foundation committed $5,000 for the youth to be able to set aside as grant money. So they gave them seed money for their grants. And then they developed their own criteria. And yes, some of it they did want to appeal more to the young. I mean, they've supported in the past things like the Story County Dental Clinic and Reach Out and Read, but of course that's youth as well. But it isn't restricted just to youth, but yes, they're definitely the things that appeal to them the most. In the beginning, we did have many more grants than the students could actually fund with their $5,000. But many of them were not appropriate grants for this particular group and their grant guidelines. And I think the fact that we're not having quite as many applications is because those have been weeded out and the ones that they're getting are much more appropriate. And then to add to that, this year they had significantly more money to grant. They had a donor that gave them specifically money for the youth to grant to add to their grant pool, which was really, really special, and actually he has done that for a few years now. He really thinks that's a good program for the youth.
They mentioned that at their meetings, every month they'd pick out a service project and I think they said a fundraiser. Do they raise much money?
They don't. We don't put a lot of emphasis on raising money. They have done every semester they do one major service project and one small fundraising. I think the way they made the most money was raking leaves. It was kind of a team-building kind of project, and it actually worked pretty well. But they have done fundraisers at Orange Leaf and places like that. So we haven't had a lot of emphasis on fundraisers. This is a very involved, very busy group of young people, and it's hard to have enough time to do that kind of thing. And we feel like the service projects are more important than the fundraising.
So what kind of service projects do they do?
Well, at their next meeting, they're going to put labels on books for raising readers. Usually, every year, they have done a food collection day for the Emergency Residence Project or one of the housing agencies in Story County. They sometimes do a work fun project with the Boys and Girls Club, and they will go in one night and do activities with Boys and Girls Club and help them do a project. They made baby blankets, cut the fleece and tie those, and they did those with the Boys and Girls Club. You know, I think one of the things I felt best about is that this is a very unique and special situation for a lot of our students. And in things like helping, I've written a lot of recommendations for students applying for scholarships or college applications and that sort of thing, because this is a unique program that will set them aside from some of the activities other students have done that are applying for the similar place or scholarship. All of the students really, I think, have gained experience and valuable lessons.
Thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure talking to you today, and it's wonderful to know that we have this program here in Story County.
Oh, well, thank you, and thank you for all you do to make the community aware of these things. It helps us all.
This is KHOI Community Radio, and we're listening to Local Talk, where we explore the people, stories, and events in central Iowa. And we were just listening to an interview that Susan conducted with Susie Scherholz from the Story County Community Foundation about the youth philanthropists and the Story County, both the Story County Community Foundation itself and the youth philanthropists have been very generous with KHOI in the past, and so we are very happy to describe the work they do that really is for the benefit of Story County. And now we'd like to move on to, we have a guest in the studio, Betsy Mayfield. Good morning, Betsy.
Good morning.
And Betsy, would you, Betsy's here to talk about a project, but before we start, could you tell us a little bit about yourself, your resident Ames, and can you talk a little bit about how long have you been in the Ames area?
Sure. Thanks for having me, Ursula and Susan. I came to Ames 40 years ago. That seems impossible, but I remember John and I drove into Ames, and I was used to New Jersey. So it was quite a surprise, and I remember John took me to see the first Star Wars movie
that
anybody put out, and that was my reward for coming to Ames, Iowa.
Well, that dates you squarely. In the,
sure does. And now it's come full circle, I think. Anyway, I was a fundraiser for Iowa State and did that for about 10 years. And then I got a job in New York City. So I had a wonderful stint there for a couple years where I was coming between Iowa and New York back and forth. It was really actually a lucky situation. And through that, I did a lot of travel to third world countries. I don't like to say that. I should say developing countries. And several of them had a lot of impact on me. One was Cyprus, which isn't really a developing country, but close. And the Middle East and Rwanda. I went to Rwanda, Ukraine and Romania. And then later on, when one of my daughters moved to Australia, we started going there once a year. And we've also, we do home exchange a lot, and we go to France in the summer sometimes for a whole month, and I've become a Francophile. So those countries influenced my thinking a lot about the middle class and about who I am in the world. And so that's sort of how I got interested when Democracy for America gave me a call and asked me if I would host Robert Reich's movie, Inequality for All, at my home. And Susan came. We had about 15 people, and I think there were two or three groups here in Ames that ran that movie.
Betsy, what is Democracy for America?
You know what? I'm hardly sure. But I think... Well, Democracy for America came out of Obama for America. And then the kids that were left over from that started working in a nonpartisan way. I think the topics are things that they want to see legislated. And they go around and try to talk to people about something like increasing the minimum wage or the immigration laws or anything that a citizen wants to put before the community. And I do not believe we have a representative here in Iowa, Ames.
But so how did they find you?
Who knows?
they called you? Or?
They emailed me. I'm on their list.
I hate to tell you this, but it's not very exclusive. I got one of those emails. Do you want to host a party? And I thought,
no.
No. And then I
no, it isn't exclusive at all, I'm sure.
So why did you decide to host the party?
Well, first of all, I'm a movie person. I love movies, and I like to share them with people. My husband, John Mayfield, who is a professor at Iowa State, he won't watch movies with me most of the time. I like war movies, and he doesn't. So we have a conflict there a little bit. And so when I can get anybody to watch a movie with me, I'm thrilled. And this was a chance to get maybe 15 people to watch a movie with me.
So did you get 15 people?
Oh, yeah. And it's... as I say, Susan came, and, you know, people that I just ran into and said, come on over. It was a very good movie, funny. Robert Reich was Secretary of Labor, I believe. Is that correct?
Yes.
Under two presidents. Was it two?
No. Just Clinton.
Just Clinton.
And actually, he had to leave Clinton's, as he said.
Well, he was so obnoxious, he said.
Well, he kept saying, there's inequality. We've got to address inequality. And they sort of said,
yeah. Be quiet. And so he finally, he's also a professor at Berkeley, I believe.
Yes, and that's a very significant part of the movie because the movie actually ends with his class. I think his class appears several times. But as one reviewer said, he's the kind of professor you wish you could have.
Yes, he is. And he's a tiny little guy, and he goes around in what the kind of car?
Morris Mini.
A mini car. And it's just, he makes a big joke of that. And John and I were thinking of getting such a car, but John's 6'3", and he thought he wouldn't fit in it. So Robert Reich is very much on our mind.
So, okay, so you had a movie showing at your house. You had
right.
at least 15 people showed up.
Right.
And then what happened next?
And so the next thing, you know, it's okay to have a movie like that and to have an event of any kind, but if you don't have a follow-up, mm-hmm. it's sort of, blah, nothing happens. So these kids were on the ball, the Democracy for Now people, and they immediately got on my case to circulate a petition. And I didn't really know how to get started with that, but they have a website. You can just find it by typing in democracyforamerica.com, and you go to that site, and it said Robert Reich wants you to circulate a petition. And so you go click the correct button, and then they show you, they have a sample, they have all kinds of samples which you can copy, or you can come up with your own wording, and it's short. It doesn't take very long to come up with what you want to say. I thought the hardest thing was deciding on who to send it to.
Okay, before we get to that, let's go back for a minute. What is the petition exactly about?
The petition that I did was to try to get Iowa, the state of Iowa, to raise the minimum wage to $10.10 an hour. I knew that Herman Quernbach had a bill before the Senate, the Iowa State Senate, and also Jack Hatch had one. I looked those up. I don't think they've come out of committee yet, but I thought, okay, I'll address it to them.
And why did you feel really motivated to follow through with this?
As I said, when I was introducing myself, I mentioned all the countries that I visited. And particularly in Rwanda, Middle East, in the countries that didn't have a middle class, countries where people were either extremely wealthy or really poor, there was a lack of balance in those countries that sort of ruined them for the people. And, you know, when you have nothing and nobody has anything at all, you become very jealous if anybody gets ahead at all. And so it wasn't a warm, cozy feeling that I think we have in America. And that's something to value. So we have enough in this country. We have a middle class where we all have something, or we wish we all had something. Unfortunately, it's going away because some of us have way too much and some have nothing. And this is very destabilizing, in my opinion. And, you know, I only have experiential background on this, but I can't tell you the difference between a third world country and here. Mm-hmm. And then in my travels, I also mentioned Australia and France. Mm-hmm. Gee, you go to France and you think you're in a heaven of culture. I mean, it's slow. The government does a lot for the people. The people pay high taxes, but they have a lovely life. And Australia, the minimum wage is $16 an hour. The salaries are reasonable. You don't have to tip in a restaurant. And it just, the atmosphere is up and coming, not down and going. Mm-hmm. And so I thought that was very important. And so the minimum wage strikes me in the heart. Mm-hmm. And I think also, you know, people that are against it keep saying, well, it's going to ruin the economy and people will have to pay their workers more. But I have to ask, who do you know who's happy on a minimum wage when they can't afford to eat?
Mm-hmm. So what did you do with that? When did you present it to Herman? I know that was your intention.
I circulated the petition online. I didn't have to walk around the neighborhood or anything. And I have never used Twitter. And gee, Twitter was terrific. Every day I would put up a message about this and I'd get 10 or 20 names. And then, of course, I use Facebook. And that was, I get 10 or 20 more names. It took no time at all to get 500 names. Now, this is a popular subject. There are subjects that I'm interested in that probably wouldn't get 500 names in a few days. But this was easy. And, in fact, I was asked to get 100 names, but I actually got 500.
Now
plus.
Now, you get the 500 names, and you have to do something with them.
Right.
And we actually have on tape, not on tape, we have a recording of you and the person you presented him to. So we'd like to play that.
Okay. So I'll be quiet. Hello, my name is Betsy Mayfield. I'm a citizen of Ames, Iowa. And I've recently had the pleasure of working with Democracy for America. They asked me to show Robert Reich's film, Inequality for All. And we had a nice little group of about 15 people. And the result of that was that we developed a petition asking our state senate to really look into the minimum wage question. We did a petition to two senators, both of whom who do have bills to raise the minimum wage. One is Senator Herman Kornbach, and the other is Senator Jack Hatch.
Just a minute.
In line with what is being asked for nationally, this asks for a minimum wage of $10.10. We're very eager to present this to you, Herman, and we hope you will take it very seriously. The only difference between this petition and your bill is that we ask you to get this job done right now.
Well, Betsy, I want to thank you for gathering the signatures and demonstrating the support for raising the minimum wage. The public opinion polling across the country has shown very broad support, even among Republicans, especially among Democrats and independents. The people at the bottom end of the wage scale, they haven't had a raise in 7 years. It's about time they got a little bit more for their hard work.
Some of the people that did not want to sign the bill said that it was silly to do something for the very lowest level, that the bill needed to incorporate raises for those a little bit above the minimum wage. What do you respond to that?
Well, certainly this is going to help not just the people at the current minimum, which is 7 1/4 an hour, but if you raise it eventually to 10.10 an hour, everybody between 7 1/4 and 10.10 is going to get a boost. And it's likely that there will be people above that level who will also get something of an increase. You know, businesses feel they have to maintain some sort of a wage structure to reward people who have more experience and more skills, so above the minimum.
We have another person here today who was at the film, which I encourage everyone to see, by Robert Reich. It's called Inequality for All, if I haven't mentioned that. Her name is Gail Heppner. She's a teacher here in Ames, Iowa, or she's a retired teacher, and I'm going to ask her if she has anything to say about why she would like to see minimum wage happen.
I'm Gail Heppner. I feel that anybody who wants to have people employed in a position, those people should have a living wage so that they can support themselves. And the living wage will be spent in Iowa. It won't be sent to the Cayman Islands in an offshore account.
Well, that's very important that a lot of the people who work at the minimum wage, some of them are single parents trying to support their families. Some of them are kids, college kids trying to earn enough to pay tuition so they don't have to borrow so much money. I mean, everywhere you look, there are people who are struggling to get by. And like I say, I think they deserve a little bit more for their labor. One of the other things that we've been doing in the state legislature is also investing in skills training. We put, I think, $34 million last year into the community colleges to give people who are working at low-wage jobs the opportunity to acquire additional skills so they can move on up the wage ladder. So we need to take care of the folks at the bottom. We need to also help people climb the ladder of success.
Now, Herman, one more thing. You said eventually. I don't think it can be eventually till we get $10.10. I really think that this is a bill, an important bill that needs to get pushed through now, and the $10.10 starts now because we're way behind the rest of the world. I really think of the developed countries.
At my first job, when I was 17 years old and just fresh out of high school, was for minimum wage. It was in the summer of 1968 for $1.60 an hour, which sounds pretty pitiful until you realize that adjusted for inflation, that's the highest the minimum wage has ever been. That's the highest minimum wage has ever been, adjusted for inflation. It was $1.60 an hour in 1968. So we just have not kept up. Income inequality is greater in the United States than for almost any other economically advanced nation. And the income inequality has been growing dramatically over the last 30 years. We've got to do a lot of different things. Skill building, I mentioned, but we have to start by raising the minimum wage. And by the way, my bill would go to 10 1/4 an hour.
I'm thrilled to hear that. I think it's really important that we are fair to our people, or at least start being fair. I'm not sure that's the end of fair, but it's the beginning.
Well, one of the other things that we ought to do, and I tried to convince people of to do this back when we last raised the minimum wage in 2007, we ought to index it for inflation.
Yes.
So that we don't have a 7-year gap and then have to make up a couple of bucks. If you indexed it for inflation, then it would move forward at a reasonably slow but predictable pace. And I think that that would make it easier for businesses to adjust as well. So I don't have a section in my bill to do that, but whatever legislation does eventually come forward, I hope that we can include that in there.
I'm Gail Heppner again. I would like to say something about the hidden costs of the current minimum wage. Many people object to raising the minimum wage would be too expensive. Currently, minimum wage earners are supplemented by SNAP and Medicaid. So it's a human dignity issue as well as a minimum wage issue.
Well, that point is very well taken. When you hear stories about McDonald's or Walmart or some of these other big corporations that employ a lot of people at or near the minimum wage, actively encouraging their employees to sign up for food stamps or SNAP, as it's called now, or Medicaid, I mean, this makes it very clear that they are not covering the full costs of the workers that they were hiring, they are depending, these corporations are depending on the public sector to subsidize their workers because they themselves are not paying adequately. And I'm just shocked by that.
Tumble out of bed and I stumble to the kitchen. Pour myself a cup of ambition and yawn and stretch and try to come to life. Jump in the shower and the blood starts pumping. Out on the streets the traffic starts jumping. With folks like me on the job from 9 to 5. Working 9 to 5. What a way to make a living. Barely getting by. It's all taking and no giving. They just use your mind. Just a step on the boss man's ladder, but you got dreams he'll never take away. In the same boat with a lot of your friends, waiting for the day your ship will come in and the tide's gonna turn and it's all gonna roll your way. Working 9 to 5, what a way to make a living. Barely getting by, it's all taking and no giving. They just use your mind and you never get the credit.
This is KHOI Community Radio with your hosts, Ursula Rudenberg and Susan Franzen. Earlier, we had an interview with people from the Story County Youth Philanthropists. They were Emma Peeler, Hari Sivaskandan, and Susie Shearholz. Then, we spoke with Betsy Mayfield and Gail Heppner as they presented a petition in support of raising the minimum wage to $10.10 per hour to State Senator Herman Quirnbach.
Thanks for technical support for this show to James Winters, our new volunteer here at the station. And as always, Local Talk is engineered by Rebecca Brown. Music you heard included 9 to 5 by Dolly Parton from her CD, Dolly Parton's 16 Biggest Hits. And as always, our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley.
You can also listen to this show and all of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org, where you'll find an archive for all of the Local Talk shows we've produced since we went on the air on 2012. Recent shows will be posted on our homepage as soon as our webmaster, Ron Carson, can get the information. There you will find lists of our guests and links to the organizations and other resources mentioned on our shows.
If you enjoyed this show, tell your friends and consider becoming one of the 500 families who donate $20 per month or $250 per year to help us meet our operating expenses, though we always appreciate whatever it fits your budget. We'd also like to hear your feedback, and either by telephone at 515-292-2878, that's 292-2878, or by email at khoiradio@gmail.com with news in the subject line.
Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a radio show. If you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 292 292- 2878 or at the email khoiradio@gmail.com. Your participation as audience is what makes KHOI possible. Thank you for listening, and
see you again on the radio.